Hello, welcome to Divine Manifesting. This is Rebecca Grotto, and I'm pleased to announce that I have a special speaker with me today, Karen Wilson. Thank you for being on the show with me, Karen. How are you?
Well, I'm really well today. I'm so glad to be here with you. I'm appreciate being asked, and I expect this to be a very pleasurable experience.
Oh, good, good. I love your positive take on this. I actually, just for the listeners, I met Karen, about 2 months ago at a conference, and it was a conference on money-making and marketing, and it was pretty dry. It was a great conference, but, you know, pretty dry on tools and strategies for marketing. But in the sea of all these people was this incredible bright light out there. Karen is just beautiful inside and out. And it was, I think I just glommed onto you and made sure that we had lunch together and dinner. And it was really wonderful. So she is just such an amazing, amazing spirit to know. And Christy and I both just were thrilled to make her acquaintance. And Christy, just so everybody knows, Christy is practicing the laws of manifesting. She's in St. Martin this week, enjoying surf and sand. That girl can manifest like nobody's business. So anyways, I hope she's having a great time, and she will be back in a couple of weeks. But in the meantime, I invited Mary to speak, and she was so gracious and was willing to join today and talk some more about manifesting in abundance and what happens when we get stuck and how to move through those areas. But something I've never asked you, Karen, is how did you get started on your journey? How did you, begin your path of awakening?
It's a long one, isn't it, for everyone? Let me give you a thumbnail sketch here. When I came on the planet, I was born in near Arizona, and there was a Navajo woman. Her name was Mrs. Painter. That wasn't her real name, but being young, I couldn't pronounce her real name, and she taught me how to sand paint, and so I called her Mrs. Painter. And to be able to do that, what she really did was teach me about the unseen world. She taught me how to talk to rocks and clouds and trees and birds, that everything is alive. And so that you had to ask stones if they were willing to be part of this painting or not. And I took all that in that was up till the age of six. So during those magical years, I just took that all in. And, of course, I tucked it away. Life didn't allow that kind of magical thinking, you know. I had some big losses, some difficulties in my youth. I was with my mother when she died of a horse accident. I was the only one there. I was 11 years old.
Oh, wow.
Just, some big things. Mm-hmm. We all have them. And probably that was all preparation. The bell went on. The light, I couldn't get away from it when I was in my mid-20s, which, by the way, was, oh my, over 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
How can that be?
Mm-hmm.
I was diagnosed with scleroderma. That's a disease where the protein in the collagen that lines our organs and muscles begins to harden, and it doesn't allow tissues to move. It doesn't allow fluids to flow. Boy, was I stuck.
Oh, boy.
I mean, literally.
Literally.
Uh-huh. And I didn't have any idea how I'd gotten that way, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Had to be the people in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't have been me.
Mm-hmm.
So the good doctors told me, don't have any more children, get your affairs in order, and you might have 6 to 18 months to live.
Mm.
That's all they knew at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine how dazed I was. And confused and terrified. And on the very day that I'd been given that prognosis, I was trying to find my way out of the huge underground medical center. It's a big maze. And even though I'd been there before, I got lost, another metaphor for where I was in my life. And I passed by a darkened doorway, and something caught my attention, and it was a piece of equipment with a little screen on it. I could barely make out the silhouette of a person standing next to the equipment. And I asked, you know, what's happening in here? And this voice from the shadowy room said, biofeedback. And I thought out loud, I said, well, this is in the early 70s, by the way. So, and I said, I know bio means life. Does that mean that life feeds itself? And this voice...
Good question.
Yeah. That's what I mean. This, everything stopped in that moment. This, and this voice said, I never did see the person, said, I'm conducting research to show that people can change their blood pressure, skin temperature, and heart rate by concentration. I went dizzy. I'd just been told that science couldn't help me with these hard brown patches on my skin, that they would grow, become worse, and then I'd die probably soon. So it was like the hospital walls began to shimmer.
Yeah.
And my breath deepened. I felt like I was on fire. All the sounds of the hospital faded. And this voice came from somewhere in me and around me, and very calm, very sturdy, very firm, said, if it's possible, I can do it. I didn't know how I was going to heal myself. I didn't know anything. I just knew that, that was possible to make those changes with my thoughts, and the way I use them. I've since learned those are two different things that sometimes we put together in one package. But the, if I had particular thoughts and I used them in a particular way, then I could heal myself. And you
know, just having that potential, that possibility, was all it took, was the spark that ignited.
You know, rather than the thought that it was a causative factor was inside me, that was rather than being ashamed of that, all of a sudden now I'm empowered. It's as though I have the right and the ability to change. I didn't have the right to do a lot of things when I was young, nor the ability. But in that moment, things, and I began to do the outrageous, which for me, which was to make my survival and vitality and happiness a priority. All the nerve,
Especially back in that time.
Oh, it felt very nervy at the time.
Yeah. I mean, we say it now, and we're like, well, of course, you know. But I'm thinking, you know, 30 years ago, really, I don't think that that was the mindset. That was the consciousness. So bravo to you to be experiencing this level of awareness. So go on. I want to hear more.
Well, it was during the time where consciousness studies were just beginning out of Stanford. It was, you know, President Nixon went to China. That was a big deal. And they videotaped our Western medicine videotaped people having surgeries with acupuncture. We just couldn't get it.
Right.
We thought this was way up. That was all during this time. So in a way, I was really fortunate because I went to those conferences. I saw those videos. I started studying acupuncture. I took myself on quite a dramatic learning curve of traditional and non-traditional learning. I remembered Mrs. Painter, finally, during that time. And then I, at the time, I was an exercise physiologist, so the quantum science and the physiology of it all really spoke to me. And, of course, the indigenous wisdom, the Arizona piece, and the Eastern knowledge. So I began to meditate, and still do 30 years later. I just became this... I let my curiosity just open the throttle and just learned and practiced whatever I could. So I became a movement specialist, and I'm a massage therapist. I'm a psychological counselor. And we have that in common. And a dream consultant. I studied for 10 years with Charlotte Silver and with Rosalind Breyer for healing, 5 years in Hawaii with the kahunas, South America with the... There's five particular shaman who I've studied with for years, and it just, you know, blah-de-blah, but it's been an incredible, incredible trip. And so basically, I sense, read, and utilize the power of subtle communication as a key to health, and success in relationships, and that's an ongoing purpose.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, getting unstuck is only the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Remaining unstuck is the joyous journey.
Yes. Yeah. But this thing called awakening that I think, you know, it's a path, it's a journey we're all on. Yours is just an amazing, yours is a book that needs to be written. It's just an amazing journey, but that how we awaken is so interesting to me, how we all hear those callings and the things that guide us to certain places and, you know, the Mrs. Painters or the biofeedback guy and, you know, and it just, it's if you're really sitting back and observing the unfolding of your life, the awakening of your life, it's really truly fascinating. For me, it's a feeling of being so surrendered and so divinely guided that who's really controlling the show? Who's really, you know, moving me through my life? Now, I know, and I'm sure, I know that I have creative control, and I'm sure there's a part of me that loves to think it's solely in control, but there's probably a large part of me, I'll go ahead and admit that.
Truth confession.
But, you know, listening to you talk, it was so illuminating and so, it was just right there, how you were being guided by so many forces outside of yourself, and, you know, to just be surrendered to that, I think, is such a grace, and to allow yourself to be pushed and pulled and moved by the river, by the divine, you know, flow and movement of the river is just such a gift. And thank you for sharing that story. It really, that was what I took from it, was how there's something so much bigger than all of us guiding us. And if we will just relax and sit back, the unfoldment is happening with or without us, whether we're resisting it or not. So, you know,
this is such an important piece. I love that you're saying this. You know, I have to take a look at the fact. You make this sound so easy, this unfolding and surrendering and moving through life and sit back and relax.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have to remember that I had taken myself all the way. You know, I had pinned myself to the wall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so this whole lesson of unfolding and surrendering and journeying and moving was not easy for me.
Right.
I actually, it's a little embarrassing, but it's the truth. I actually was rather proud of the fact that I was using my strength to hold on,
mm-hmm.
to hold on to a marriage and relationship that, you know, once I began to do the outrageous thing and be responsible for my own happiness, that relationship could no longer sustain.
Uh-huh.
So I knew there were big changes ahead, but I didn't want to be the one to make them.
Right.
And I was, and I almost saw that as nobility or loyalty.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I had all these things all mixed up. Hang on. Pull yourself up, keep going, you can do it, tough it out. That's the noble thing.
Mm-hmm.
And to stop, to quit, to go another direction was really terrifying. And like I say, I really didn't know that I could. I mean, that sounds so simple mm-hmm. now. But I think that's a huge piece. It's like a little tiny rock in your shoe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It really means a lot. I keep in touch with that,
mm-hmm.
How am I using myself? And I love how you talk about the river. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm sure you know, as your listeners probably do too, the saying of, you know, if you're thirsty, the river appears.
Mm.
If
mm-hmm.
you're not thirsty,
exactly,
there is no river.
Uh-huh.
And until that time, I wasn't thirsty. I was, but
mm-hmm.
I was, instead of feeling my own thirst, I was trying to handle it all myself.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, staying thirsty, and the
uh-huh.
river is there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you brought up something that I absolutely agree with. I think that, you know, especially in our culture, we're so trained to see nobility as, you know, having that fighter spirit. You know, all of our themes are around conquering and coming through the impossible and challenging it. And I think there's, you know, great wisdom in that. But we really don't see as being noble the act of surrender. We see it as weakness. Well, surrender, isn't that apathy? Isn't that just giving in? You know, shouldn't you pull yourself up by your bootstraps? Shouldn't you, you know, fight? And I think there's, you know, two sides of the same coin, but there is that part of us that needs to learn to see surrender, to see great release and letting go and acceptance as not apathy or, you know, just giving in or, you know, having weakness of spirit. That is not it at all. I think sometimes it's easier to fight and think we're in control than it is to surrender to something greater to us. I think to feel so small and vulnerable and to really get beyond the ego that says, I'm totally in charge, I have it under my control, you know, that place within us that says, you know, the river is so much greater than me, I am just so small. The best
time
thing
to get wet.
The best thing I can do is pull the oars in and let it guide me, you know, rather than fighting to get to the other end, you know, get to an opposite shore. I think that, to me, I'm learning, is really the sign of great wisdom and great strength, is to know when to come in with your creative control, but not to ever overshadow or impose what is the greater flow within. It's always to be listening to, why am I being directed over here? Scleroderma. What is that about? You know, what are the lessons involved here? There's a real acceptance that needs to come with that if we're really going to get the lessons. And I think if we're really going to be happy in our lives, it's about acceptance versus constantly trying to control it and direct it. And, you know, and that's not to say that intentions aren't great and that we don't have a good amount of creative control, but it's really, I think, the basis to, when I think about truly being content in my life and peaceful, the basis to that is the acceptance, is the allowing peace to it. There's a component of just allowing the greater river to be guiding me, and I'm just on this journey watching it unfold and watching the characters come in and watching them, you know, asking why they're here and what am I learning. And, you know, through the stuckness and through the, you know, the great joys, you know, but I think when it comes to the stuckness, I mean, you definitely dealt with losses and then, you know, this whole illness. How did you move beyond it, Karen? I mean, you visited many healers from all over, but how did you start to move beyond it? When did you know that you were freeing yourself from this?
Good question. And that came in pieces over time. Mm-hmm. It was like a bit of a puzzle, you know, mm-hmm. You kind of feel how this piece fits with that piece, and then it does, and that feels good, and then you find another piece. Didn't happen all at once. The first thing was to absolutely accept where I was, which was the hardest thing. I had to keep opening my awareness. I had this triple A thing going about mm-hmm. awareness, acceptance, and action.
That's good.
Okay. Tendency is, I found for myself and I found with my clients too, that this is a very simple formula that really helps us get back into the starting gate, you know, into really where we need to be to make a move. Awareness, sometimes we get awareness and acceptance mixed up as though they're the same thing. Oh, mm-hmm. I'm aware of that. Oh, mm-hmm. Sort of like, oh, I get it. Uh-huh. Well, no.
Uh-huh.
No, uh-huh. I'm just aware of it now. Acceptance is going to a deeper place with it. Uh-huh. Kind of like you said, well, okay, I'm aware of scleroderma, so now I have to, like, eat better. Well, that's jumping into an action, trying to do something to take care of the awareness. And just staying in acceptance. I get that I have this. I get that my thinking has helped me get here. Mm-hmm. What comes up when I accept that when I more realization. Maybe there's shadow work to do. Maybe there's family of origin work to do. Maybe there's so all that the work for me, and it's a pleasurable work. It's not just hard labor,
mm-hmm.
because it's like, oh, I get it. It's liberating.
Mm-hmm.
For me, liberation comes through the acceptance piece, and that's where the work is. Because once we have that awareness and acceptance and responsibility, we now have choice. Choice doesn't
mm-hmm.
come on the... It's there on the front end, but often we can't see it on the front end.
Right.
And for me, that's where the light starts coming in, and then I go, okay, well, I have choices here. I have lots of choices.
Yeah.
How did I get through it? Humor.
Uh-huh.
Actually, that was the beginning of really appreciating courage.
Mm-hmm.
In this long process for me, I have come in my heart, in my knowing, to hold courage as the highest virtue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because for me, courage is the one virtue that allows the others to be sustained. Courage is what allows beauty to be sustained. Courage is what allows real loyalty, real honesty, real openness. You know, even this acceptance, which I hold as a high value,
mm-hmm.
To be able to keep the door of acceptance open takes courage.
Right.
And, you know, oftentimes, that's what I mean. I'm trying to think about this. There's no huge, huge choice. It's
mm-hmm.
I had a client who went, I use her line all the time. She goes, I get it. It's a gazillion little choices every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
not the big ones. Do I move to this city?
Mm-hmm.
It's all the little ones. And
something that, if you don't mind me jumping in, something
sure.
that I hear you saying is, you know, with acceptance and with humor, I think we get there when we're detached enough. It's not quite so personal. And I was just thinking to myself, again, you know, that observing the problem, to be able to observe it such as it is, just in that action, whenever we're stuck, whenever we're, you know, in that either we're frustrated or we're just blah or what's going on or things aren't coming, or, you know, wherever we are, whether it's the huge crises to the little just, oh, I'm just blah today, whenever we're in that stuffness, I think for me the first step I'm thinking as you're talking of getting out of that is the witness, is the awareness of just observing where I am without instantly wanting to fix it. And I think our inclination is to want to get out of this and get out of it fast, but the
exactly.
first step is really breathe and just, like you said, just, you know, even before acceptance, it's just stop for a second and be with it. Just watch it. And in the observing it, in the witnessing it, if there's us witnessing it, we've naturally and automatically detached from it.
Mm-hmm.
We've separated just enough to see that it's not quite so personal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not becoming it. I'm not, you know, sort of churning in it. I've now stopped and stepped out of myself just enough to go, oh, look at you. Oh, look at you, lost and stuck and,
yes.
and floundering around.
You sweet darling thing.
Yeah, and aren't you kind of funny doing that? Or I love to stop myself every now and then just go, oh, look at you whining. Boy, there is no bigger whiner.
That's one technique I used. I allowed myself 10 minutes a day to whine.
Beautiful.
and let myself have it and let the voice go. And every time you
uh-huh.
and she and he said it, I
yes.
can't. And wait, yes. why? And,
uh-huh.
I, and the best place to whine is in the shower.
Uh-huh.
Because you're in water.
Uh-huh.
And it just drains your field and all that whining. You know, Mother Earth loves
mm-hmm.
anything we have to discard.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that we don't want, don't need, can't use, I've already
right.
used up, Mother Earth loves it. So the water just goes right down, and all that whining goes, and that's where I find I'm the funniest. Because after about, it's not easy. After about 3 minutes, it starts getting boring or hysterical.
That's my point.
And the answers come. You know, it's like, well, if I'm saying every time you always, well, if it's every time, well, then why am I going to do it again?
Right.
You know, it begins to come. So whining in the shower is a long-term help.
But you gave yourself a parameter, and even in giving yourself a parameter, how I see that is you have 10 minutes. Well, who's dictating you have 10 minutes? But the observer in us is saying, go now, go. You got 10 minutes. So even in that, we're sort of witnessing ourselves doing the act, and then it becomes funny because it's like, oh, you don't even whine that well, okay? I got to tell you.
I'm tired of you.
You're boring me. Is that it? Is that all you have? You know, wow, look at you. You know? And so I think that key brings the humor on because we're watching ourselves and we're sort of like going, you know, wow, this is just sort of embarrassing. and you're not even that good of a whiner or whatever it is we say, but we're watching that and it's... And it's that ability, I think, to that first step of observing ourselves or setting a parameter means that there is a part of me that is now dictating to, I don't want to say lower as a judgment, but a smaller part of me that, you know, that is, can be very contained and that we can just, through that, I feel like then the other steps of acceptance and humor and come from that detachment, to not taking it quite so seriously. So no matter how stuck we get, whether it's a flat tire or a debilitating illness or a divorce or just the fact that, you know, I broke my nail or I just feel blah, that there's always a stuckness, but I think it grows the more we become it, the more we're in the middle of it. And if we can just remember to take a step back and breathe and look at the stuckness and really almost walk around it, you know, like Columbo, I wonder, you know. Well, let's look at it from every angle and just allow it to be what it is. That observing of it, I think, shifts the dynamic. It's not so personal, we haven't become it. And now we're just looking at it so that, like you said, it poses the ability to then be released.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not me. It's just... something almost I stepped in. So that means I can get rid of it.
It's true. And for me, too, I don't do my shower whining so much anymore, only when I need it. But it was it's a way to allow my humanness to come forward. It's a way to get the emotional overload out in a safe way, in a productive way, in a non-harmful way for you or anyone else. And sometimes we just, it's like a release valve.
Mm-hmm.
So that the observer, so that we're calm enough inside or not distracted. And that's where these two other little pieces came, thank you. One is grace. When you mentioned surrender or even whining is a kind of surrender if you only do it 10 minutes and then you really surrender, let it go. Grace is the unearned help that humans get from the spiritual realm, from the divine realm. We don't have to earn it. We don't have to be any better, any smarter, any taller, any thinner. We don't have to earn. We are here, as all of us are here together in this field of listening and being with each other. Our hearts are beating. Our breath is coming. That's grace. And that somehow, if we can observe and feel and come up with different perspectives, this is where the patience comes in. Not patience to sit around and wait, or wait for somebody else or something else, or you know, but an internal. This is something that our observer can do that I think is so beautiful. And the way I define patience is yielding to the impermanent. That that's an awareness that nothing's permanent.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Even the giant oak tree, you know,
mm-hmm.
From morning to night, and then there's another day. The seasons come and go. Some things last longer. Some things don't. We know the lining in our lining of our intestines, portions of our intestines change. Our stomach every 5 days. On our bones, our cells are different. We have a whole new skeletal system every 7 years. So even our cells are coming and going. And to yield to that with grace, to that awareness, that truth, that this moment is changing even as I breathe through it.
Mm-hmm.
This insurmountable difficulty that this, this a death pronouncement or the end of a relationship or this, the intensity of this moment is passing as I breathe through it. And that for me is patience.
Mm-hmm.
Not sitting around twiddling your thumbs, really being impatient.
Mm-hmm.
But patience is a beautiful, patience and grace go together for me and helped me continue to. So those are other pieces. Long way around answering your question.
Yeah,
how do you get through this stuff?
Those are really good, and I hear what you're saying in terms of patience. Patience isn't sitting around wanting something to be different, expecting it to be, I'm just going to tolerate. Patience isn't tolerating.
Right.
I think it's more a sense of, like you said, accepting. It has that flavor of, not resisting what is. Not resisting and just waiting for it to pass, hunkering down and waiting for it to pass, but really being with it and knowing that it all, I love the word impermanence, everything is impermanent. It's shifting and there's no holding on to or you will suffer, and there's no trying to get it to be a certain way, you're going to suffer. Just knowing that it's all going to keep moving and going with that, I think those are two, the observing and then the allowing, it seems like, are two really good key steps to simply sitting back and watching and being in the surrender and in the flow, the witnessing of it, and then also just allowing it to be as it is, knowing that it will always be moving and shifting and changing.
There's the river.
There's the river again, and that, the good times come and go, and so do the stuck times. So
yes.
Do the, there's a feeling of relaxing through it, and just, and also I think for me, sometimes I solidify the stuckness within myself through the judgment, that I shouldn't be here. If I'm a deliberate creator and I'm creating my reality, well, then I shouldn't be creating stuckness or crises or sorrow or hard times in my reality. And I hear so many of my clients say that. They come in and they just, they've been practicing these laws of attraction and they've, really consider themselves great manifestors. And then when things are not going well in their lives, they almost anchor that stuckness through their judgment of themselves. Maybe I'm just a hoax. Maybe I'm just a liar. I'm a sham. And I think, boy, that's
That's we sure so, can be hard on ourselves, can't we?
Oh, my gosh. we can be hardest on ourselves. We're the hardest ones, I think for many of us, we're so forgiving of everybody else. And when it comes to the standards we place on ourselves, it's just so sad. And I think, especially when I look within myself, this stuckness wasn't that great. It wasn't that grand in the scheme of my life. Until I started judging myself, until I started turning on myself and creating thoughts against myself. And so the key then becomes giving myself permission to be off. If I'm having a blah day, my instant thought is, what's wrong with me? What's wrong? And there's nothing wrong. I think we all have off days. I think there are just times where you step in gun. And there's just times where you bring it in the car with you. And, and it's just, no matter how big or how small, to just be again in that allowing not just the outside world to be guiding you, but your inner world to be such as it is. There are some days where I am so brimming with energy, I can't stand it. And there's other days where it's like, I'm so tired. And instantly my thoughts get attuned to that judgment of energy good, tired bad. And so I think really working on that of what is so wrong with resting? What is so wrong with having a day or two to just have downtime, to just rest, or to not want to create, or to not want to manifest, or, you know, to not have everything flow exactly as you wanted it to flow? I mean, there are just some days where everything seemed to have closed 10 minutes before I got there, you know, and that's okay too, you know. And so, but I instantly think, and I think a lot of people do this, at least a lot of people that I talk to, they then turn it on themselves because we're becoming more, I think, responsible for what we see in our reality than if we see things like resistance or stuckness or things not going the way we expect them to go. Then we are starting to turn that on ourselves, and I think that's really important to not do that, to give ourselves permission to just have off days. Mm-hmm. Say there are just days where, you know, it's not going to go the way I want. And even to take it a step further, to say, where is the lesson in this? Because, and I say this often to people who call me really concerned that they're not manifesting properly, or, you know, what's going on now? You know, these small crises are happening in my life. And I often think, but isn't that so beautiful? Because this is giving you such an opportunity to bring up that stuff that's ready to be released. I had a really good friend who's in she's a hairstylist, so she's in the beauty business, and she called me one day and she said, oh my gosh, you got to help me. I have poison oak all over my face. And I may have already told this story to the listeners, so forgive me if you've heard it before. But she was so distraught. She's like, how can I get to, you know, to the salon when my face is swollen and rashy and pussy, and it's not a pretty picture. And my first thought was, beautiful, what a great lesson, what a great mock-up. And I really thought, you know, if you could reach this phone line, you would strangle me, wouldn't you, right now? And she was like, yes, I absolutely would. But I really felt that. I thought, what a beautiful life lesson to be creating for yourself. And it's all around, I'm not my body, I'm not my beauty, I'm so much more than that. And what's the best way for spirit to teach you this lesson but to, you know, put the crud all over your face? You know, so I think that if life is often easy, where would the growth be? So when I hear people call me, or when that happens within my life, that my first inclination is to judge myself. But if I can get beyond it, then I can see what's the growth, what's the lesson. And I promise you, I've grown the most in my life during these times when I'm on my knees. You know, during the hard times are the times that I have just taken huge leaps in my awareness. And although I love to say, you know, I can grow during the easy times, it's really during those tough lessons that are coming up. So maybe sometimes when the stuckness is here, if we can stand back enough and observe it enough, we can start to find the grace, the lesson in that. And you hear what I'm saying, Karen? Are you with?
Yes, I do. Yes,
yeah.
I do. I'm sitting here thinking, for me, the first step is saying, okay, is the first thing is I'm stuck. The first thing is I have this stuff all over my face, and I want to go to work. The first thing is right where you are, you know, that saying, When you're not sure, take a look at your feet. And you're exactly where you're supposed to be.
Yep. That's good.
And, you know, this idea that growth is easy is kind of interesting to me. Because I'm not sure what easy means. There is a flow to it, but what I've been going through these last 5.5 months has been teaching me a lot. You know this, I'm sure your listeners don't. My my best friend, my joyful life journeyer partner, Mark, it feels good to say his name, of 30 years, died at the end of January. And so I am in the midst of observing my thoughts and, you know, living what we're talking about in a very conscious way. And so, you know, what's easy? I've come to, I'm going to weave this together, this idea of turning on ourselves, which you uh-huh. mentioned a couple times that caught my attention, and judgment. And this, first of all, that our past does not have to define our future.
Uh-huh.
And we tend to judge ourselves based on past ideas. Like, that would be a past idea that I cannot possibly go into work with my face like this.
Right.
Or, you know, I might be contagious, and it's the wise thing for me and for everybody else not to go in. People will be disappointed. Oh, well, I can't help it. We'll all deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, we do this judging it's good or bad mm-hmm. kind of thing. And, you know, learning. I am gaining such an incredible appreciation for all of us as children.
Yeah.
You know, if you've had children or if you have grandchildren or, you know, just remember your own childhood. When we're five, mm-hmm. you know, everything is new.
Mm-hmm.
We go to school and now we're learning new names and names of things and we're learning all the nouns. You know, this is called this and that is called that and this color is this. And then you start adding and subtracting, and you're supposed to put all your stuff in this little cubby, and then it changes the next day. No, 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 you put your stuff in this cubby. And then another adult comes in and says, no, 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 we're not even going to the cubbies today. And
uh-huh.
it's like, okay.
Uh-huh.
And constant learning. And I think if learning was easy as a child, we can sort of move with it a little easier as adults. If in our early life we had more of a chaotic environment
mm-hmm.
and things weren't consistent and we weren't quite sure and there was and difference was difficult. If difference was difficult as a child, we tend to say, okay, oh God, this is a different situation. This must be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can just, we're back to breathing. And patience and grace and kind of slide around in that a little bit and go, you know, this is just new.
Mm-hmm. And what you're making me think of, Karen, is that what are we really afraid of in the newness? I think a lot of it is failure. You brought up something really good for me. And when I was first starting out in a lot of my energetic practices, I know the founder of one of the institutes I studied at always asked us to be in psychic kindergarten. He said, you know, and he'd laugh at us if we started to get our adult hats on and our serious mode, and he would just laugh at us, and he'd go, you're never going to grow as long as you are being an adult. You must be in kindergarten. Look at a child. A child doesn't fear failure. Most children, most little kids, they're just exploring. They're in the adventure of it all. They don't have an expectation of where they're going or what they're trying to build. They're just enjoying it, and they're not taking themselves all that seriously. And so as you were talking, I thought it is really bringing ourselves back to a space of being a student, being a child, and not having to have all the answers. It's sort of like we grow up and now I need to be a teacher. But I really like being a student because there's kind of no expectations. I'm not supposed to know anything. You know, there's just no expectations. It's just whatever's coming in is coming in. And I get to be back in that adventurous, exploring space. And so I think what stops us from, what stuffs us all up energetically, I think is, you know, in terms of experiencing the newness is that in this newness I don't know the parameters and I might fail, and that fear ends up stuffing it all up, because otherwise why would we be afraid of the newness? The only thing newness would bring, if we're not afraid of failing or of getting hurt or being disappointed, is adventure. Well, that's just exciting.
Well, I think you describe our joyous, healthy inner child beautifully. You really,
mm-hmm.
really did. And I think when we're young, up until the time of teeth, as it's called, or pushing 8 years old, anywhere between 6.5 and 8 when we have that big brain change.
Mm-hmm.
So that first almost decade of our life, we have very concrete thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we're trying to please our environment,
mm-hmm.
our parents. And so we have this good or bad. We are either good or bad. And I think when we enter something new, again, depending if we had a lot of freedom and support for our adventures as a child,
mm-hmm.
It just, you know, we can get dirty and it's okay. But if we get our little dress dirty and we're afraid we're going to be yelled at, you know, then I go to bad. I don't want to be bad.
Uh-huh.
And this dichotomy between good and bad
is
a made-up one.
Mm-hmm. There's the judgment again.
There it is, exactly.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And of course, we come to it, you know, as humans, very honestly. It's our left brain thinking.
Uh-huh.
The left brain can only do that. Good, bad, all, nothing, black, white, yes, no, hot,
uh-huh.
cold, up,
duality.
Down. Yeah. Uh-huh. So it's lovely. I mean, it's given us mathematics, you know. This is it. But we need that rounding. We need
uh-huh.
that thing that humor and laughter and adventure and joy and what the heck and that comes. And so reminding ourselves that that whatever is happening today that feels so huge, it's just new. I mean, that's one of the first places. Okay, this is just new.
It's just new? Is that what you said?
Yes.
It's just new.
Just new.
And if we're looking as creators to bring in more possibilities and more opportunities, those are going to be new experiences. So we have to really look within it. What part of us is afraid of the new? What part of us is afraid of the change or is trying to resist that in any way? Because I'm hoping that we can all just stand at the ocean's edge and throw our arms up and say, bring it all in. All the experiences, good, bad, you know, there is no judgment on them. The tough ones, bring in the stuffness. Bring in all of it as an experience. And I think if we can stand in that place as children laughing at it all, you know, boy, the sandcastle fell apart. Uh-oh. You know, I say this to clients a lot. It's like, I think, you know, when we truly, truly start practicing self-love, loving ourselves so deeply and accepting that little child within, you know, how did we used to speak to our children when they would make a mistake or they would fall down and they were trying to learn to walk? I mean, it was just, I remember saying, uh-oh, no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd plop down on their little diapered butt, uh-oh,
mm-hmm.
and then get back up, try again, I've been practicing that in my own life, being able to say that to myself. When I make a colossal
Beautiful.
Mistake, uh-oh, just get back up, do it again. You know, and it's like, wow, that feels so much better, and I can see that I open to newer and greater experiences when I am willing to give myself that, it's okay, uh-oh.
Yeah.
You just made a mistake, you know.
Impermanent.
Impermanent.
It's nice to throw in some grown-up words.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's moving right now. It's okay.
And that is such a great feeling. And then I feel like then we can start bringing in so many more opportunities and like you said, you open your mind to potentials that you open the show with talking about. It sparks the mind to be able to open to new potentials. The mind isn't so closed down into I can only live in this small realm because I master this realm and I can control it and I'm not afraid of failing. So I think, you know,
mm-hmm.
what we're talking about is really just that space of living life with your arms wide open. And
well, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's our arms, it's our mind,
mm-hmm.
it's our heart, and it's our belly. It's our
mm-hmm.
hara, our heart mm-hmm. of courage,
mm-hmm.
and our deepest, wide open. And
mm-hmm.
it's knowing when to close a little bit, that's healthy too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, knowing how to navigate that.
Yeah.
And as you were, and what's right, what's true for us. So when you were talking, judgment and the word. There, a quote came to my head, I'll share, and the whole idea of prejudging, which is prejudice,
mm-hmm.
you know, the way we prejudge ourselves.
Right.
Even, okay, we're going to try something new, but, oh, God, I'll probably be awful. You know, we go to that prejudging place as a way to keep us from being excited owning our own beauty and our own power.
Mm-hmm.
So this prejudice, this judgment can live in us even another preceding a choice or a change or an event or something new. And there is this quote, that's what came to my head, so must be time to share it. It's a Oliver Wendell Holmes quote.
Mm-hmm.
The mind of a bigot. Ooh, that's a tough word, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I hate that. That's a tough word to call myself. This is when I'm learning about where I have prejudged or I've been prejudiced about my own worth.
Mm-hmm.
The mind of a bigot is like the pupil of an eye. The more light poured upon it, the more it contracts.
Oh.
The mind of a bigot is like the pupil of an eye. The more light poured upon it, the more it contracts.
Oh.
So it's important as we're to know where we have prejudged ourselves, because we are just no matter how much light gets poured on, we're going to close ourselves down to it.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, people around us, if we're trying something new, we want to start a new business, we want to cut all our hair off, we've had long hair all of our life, our whole family's in medicine, and we're going to be an artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter what that thing is, there may be people prejudging us around us. And to remember that just pouring light on them, sometimes they'll only contract.
Right.
To just keep pouring light,
right,
though, with
right,
not the focus pouring it on them, but just keep pouring your light.
Exactly. This show is all about manifesting, and I think it's our deepest desire. Anybody who's listening is interested in the concepts of manifesting, and to me, to manifest is to go beyond what is already here in your life. Obviously, you're trying to create something more, right?
Your past has brought you to where you are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So,
if your desire is to manifest, then by definition of what we're talking about today, we're trying to move into the new or the next, you know, the next best thing, the new thing. And I think we get so frustrated because we're intending it, but it's not coming in. And perhaps one of the things we can start looking at is that resistance within us to be open to the new. I may desire that career move, and I want it, I really want it, but if I'm not being honest with myself, if there's a fear in me, there's a fear of the newness and what all that may bring, we probably won't get what we desire, and our manifestations won't become real. And so I think what we're talking about today is really important. I mean, I'm getting it at such a deeper level that it's so important to really look at how open are you to the new.
Yes.
Is there a child in you giggling inside and willing to not prejudge, willing not to be so harsh on yourself?
Yeah. Are you the adult in your inner child's life that
mm-hmm.
supports your joy?
Uh-huh.
It's a big question.
It's a good question. It's a good question. Are you the mother that goes, uh-oh?
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah.
I expect you to fall down, sweetheart. That's how you learn.
Mm-hmm.
Or are you the mother that goes, oh, my God, how embarrassing.
Right.
Don't do that again. People are watching. You know, oh, come on, your good name.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. One time when I was, Christy and I are writing this book, and I was sort of like, oh, this is embarrassing. You know, my good name. I don't want my good name besmirched. And just in unison, my two kids looked at me and they went, it's not that good. Don't kid yourself. They were so tongue-in-cheek laughing at me. And I got it. I just loved them for that because they're like, oh, we've heard. It's not that good. Don't kid yourself. And it was such a hello to my spirit of, who are you kidding? That was ego talking. Why are you taking yourself so seriously?
Yes.
And I've used that over and over again. Whenever I start to get real serious about the words that go on the page and my good name, I'm thinking, oh, honey, your name isn't that good.
It ain't that good.
It's not that good. There's no falling from here. Just enjoy it. You can only go up. And that just, I got to tell you, that's such a freeing feeling, Karen.
It is.
Like, you
it
know.
Is. We're back to liberation.
It's back to liberation.
And we're the only ones who can give the gift of liberation to ourselves.
Yes.
It's just so stunning.
It's all about that liberation and freedom. Well, I know Christy and I, if you care to look at our websites, Christy is www.christywhitman.com, and mine is www.rebeccagrado, RebeccaGrado.com. And in the fall, Christy and I will be doing a workshop on releasing resistance and reclaiming self-love. And I believe at the end of August, I'm putting together a workshop on releasing some energy blocks, because I'm very into this whole concept of getting rid of all the stuckness, all the stuff that's getting in the way, and really living with arms wide open and being so good to ourselves in that way. So, and I know, Karen, I wanted to spend just a few minutes talking with you about your book, because you were gracious enough at the conference to give me a copy, both Christy and I, a copy of your book, The Heart of Courage. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I opened it at the conference and read the first poem and was in tears. It was so beautiful. It is truly just a beautiful book. So if you don't mind, I'd love for you to talk for just a second about your book and how it came to fruition. And, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you. This is a big little book. It's a Heart of Courage, Healing Words for Every Woman.
Uh-huh.
And it ended up being these little poetic vignettes, as you say. I didn't know that at the time. That's not what I started out doing. And it's basically a remembrance and... it's encouragement. I know you're very inspiring. Christy's an inspirational speaker. I'm an encouragement speaker for staying on the path. You know, helping the light go on is one thing, but how do you keep it going?
Mm-hmm.
And so these are all little stories of, or little poetic vignettes of situations in our lives of where there's loss or where we don't speak our voice, uh-huh. where we don't speak our heart. I think most all women know, if we were honest with ourselves, we look at a time when we didn't quite tell the whole truth. We were trying to please. We were trying to do
mm-hmm.
something else.
Mm-hmm.
And there are poems throughout. I've had comments of, I have more of a connection with my mother and grandmother and just other women since reading this book. And there's some study groups that, read a poem and discuss. Everyone will have a similar experience that's, of course, different than the poem brings out, but so there's groups discussing this, book clubs, and it's really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pleased with the response. I haven't gone out in the world with it much in these last 5 months, of course, as I'm doing my healing.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, isn't it interesting? As we talk about manifesting, I mean, I didn't know at the end of last year, as I'm writing Heart of Courage,
right?
And then in January, my, love of my life dies.
Uh-huh.
So this is a very heartfelt, honest book, and that hopefully is very encouraging to help people traverse the path of heart. So
Karen, if you don't mind my asking, how can people get the book?
Well, I don't mind at all. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
They can go to my website, which is www.heartofcourage1heart, and you'll see why when you see the image.
Uh-huh.
Heartofcourage.com, and in this book, I have the heart down in our hara, and it's a womb heart.
Uh-huh.
I believe that all humans have the heart in our chest, and then women in particular, although all humans have a hara,
mm-hmm.
An intuition and a feeling mind in our lower body, but we have this sort of heart that resides and resonates with this ancient cycles of creativity that inside us and makes the experience of being